Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed. Shop now for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here. It's good to have you. Hopefully you're already subscribed. If not, you're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week from Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. We've had some great guests lately. Nico Case was just here, as well as Amy Mann, Joe Henry, Karen Berquist of Over the Rhine, Walter Scobell. He's starring as Percy Jackson in the new Disney Plus series. We talked with documentarian Morgan Neville about Breakdown 1975. Emmy Lou Harris, Lori Morgan, Ayanna Lee, who stars in Highest to Lowest, Paul Feig, director of The Housemaid, and The Runarounds, Darcy Carden, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today going to be talking about A Thousand Blows, the Disney Plus show with creator, writer, executive producer Stephen Knight, and star Malachi Kirby. We'll read really quick about the show right here. Inspired by true life stories of a group of characters battling for survival in the brutal East End of London in the 1880s, 1 year later, Hezekiah's a shadow of the man he once was, whilst Sugar Goodson is estranged from his family and drinking himself to death. Just as Wapping is about to sigh its last breath, Mary Carr bursts back into town with her loyal second, Alice Diamond, to reassemble her gang and reclaim her crown. As always, Mary has a plan, one which will involve all those she holds dearest, and this time it's riskier than ever. Stephen Knight, of course, he's also the creator of Peaky Blinders. Malachi Kirby, you've seen him in Roots and Black Mirror, among many other things. We're going to get into this series. It's the second season of A Thousand Blows. Bare knuckle boxing in the late 1880s in London. Mary Carr and her all-female gang of 40 elephants, as they call themselves, and everything that's happening within this season. As I mentioned, a much darker season, and we're going to get into that with both Stephen and Malachi, to see how they prepare for something like this and to see where the story's going. We might even try to tie it into the Peaky Blinders universe. So let's jump into it and talk about the second season of A Thousand Blows, out now on Disney Plus. It's Kyle Meredith with Stephen Knight and Malachi Kirby.
Hello.
Pleasure to meet you both, and to be one of the folks who probably congratulate you on the second season of a fantastic series.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I'd also like to say hello from the land of Muhammad Ali, Louisville, Kentucky. I feel like maybe that needs to be a part of this at some point, at least. So.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, okay. That's a big claim to fame.
Well, let's see here. A Thousand Blows. Fantastic second season, like I said.
Stephen, maybe I'll start with you. Because I read, these were shot together, correct?
Yeah.
Do you think of them as two seasons when you're doing it like that?
Yeah, it was a leap of faith, not a leap of faith, but it was encouraging that Disney decided to shoot two series back to back, which, doesn't happen very often. And it was great because I think, first of all, the set that was built for this is the most remarkable set I think I've ever had the pleasure to work with, because it's built in an old brewery on the River Thames, and it basically is 1880s London. And it meant that actors could enter the set, walk down an alley, turn left, turn right, go through a pub, walk up the stairs, go to someone's bedroom, and it was the real thing. And the fact that that was there and existed, and they kept it there for the two seasons, I think, and Malachi would be able to answer this question better, but I, for me anyway, it was fantastic because I knew what that world was, and I suspect for the actors, they were able to inhabit that world fully, you know.
Yeah, Malachi, I would love to hear your take on that because I'm sure you've got your tool belt, right? Your acting tool belt that you have inside you, but those external factors and how they can help lift you up. I mean, I hear about costumes, I hear about sets, but actually having this world built around you.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I've always preferred to shoot on locations, right? Because then I don't have to pretend that things are happening or that I'm going into a door and the room's somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? But this was weird because it was a set that felt like I was shooting on location. Do you know what I mean? Like it felt like I was going to location. We were outdoors, we were indoors. It felt like we were on location and everything was real, you know, and the detail that went into every single brick of this set, like hand painted, handmade, like it all felt real. So I didn't have to pretend in that way that I could focus on other things. I didn't have to try and imagine that something was in front of me that wasn't there. You know, I don't think I really saw a green screen, really, which is special. Do you know what I mean? Credit to the people that worked on it. It's the most incredible set I've ever been on, but it's weird to call it that because it just felt like I was on location.
Is it still there? Does it still exist?
I believe so.
It does, yeah, it does. I mean, a lot of it's been protected because it is a set, but yeah, it's still there.
Kind of love knowing that that's just existing somewhere right now out in the world, you know, and
Yeah.
waiting for you all once more, I'm sure. I hope. But it's Malachi, I'll actually stick with you for a second because we go into this season, the second season, and everybody's flipped. I mean, it would feel to me like almost like a dual role, I guess, because from all the bravado that everybody carried that first time around. I mean, I think the word is broken this time, if that's correct.
Yeah, for sure. For Hezekiah, especially in season one, the person that we meet is a gentleman. He's charismatic. He's full of hope and dreams and joy and love, despite everything that he's been through, despite his painful kind of upbringing. And when we meet him in season two, that's all kind of done away with. You know, he's the same person somewhere underneath all of it, but he's a lot less self-controlled. He's a lot less compassionate. He's in a place where he wants people. The people that hurt him to feel how he feels, do you know what I mean? Or to kind of have some kind of, yeah, he's on a vengeful streak, you know, but he's underneath all of that. There is still this person that was full of hope, but he's taken a few too many blows and he's having to navigate this world in a different way at this moment. But it's a really interesting journey because he starts off in that way, but we see throughout season two how he eventually tries to find his way back to the light and back to himself. And I think he's never going to be the same. But the person that he's becoming is, I think, a lot more well-rounded.
Is that for you? Can you flip that switch like that, or do you got to ramp up into it? Because especially in this season, like it feels like that character, like he's carrying a lot of pain a lot of the time. Like when you go into the day, like how do you go into that?
I would, as I say, like, and credit to Steve who wrote this. It didn't feel like I needed to flip a switch because it's still connected to who this man is. Do you know what I mean? It's just him in different circumstances, him making different choices, but it's still the same person underneath all of that. So it didn't feel like two different people, even though he's behaving in a very different way. And I think it's a testament to how anyone could be. If you put any kind of human being in a different situation, with a different scenario and different emotions running through them, like they're gonna be able to be capable of different things, and that's what's happening with him here.
Stephen, why was the choice to go darker?
I think, in the words of Frank Sinatra, that's life. It's like it's he came. And it, as you know, it's based on real people. So someone really did, called Hezekiah Mosco, left Jamaica, came to London with an ambition to be a lion tamer. Now, what's more glorious than that? But then life happens and London happens and, relationships happen. And so what I wanted to do with Hezekiah and all of the other characters, really the central characters, was to find them in a place where they'd sort of been blown apart and explore the idea that actually their destiny was to be together. So we watch them come back together because they sort of don't. Well, the question is, do they have a choice or is it destiny or whatever? But they come back together. And that's what I wanted this series to be about, is that, it began with hope. It began with optimism and the belief that, I can make it, I can do it. And then suddenly this stuff happens, but then you don't give up. And Hezekiah, in reality as well, as a person, he didn't give up. He didn't become a lion tamer. But what did he do? He became the heavyweight champion of the world. So, it's actually is, even though it begins quite dark, in everything I write, I try to be actually positive and optimistic about the achievements that the human spirit can make.
Yeah. Which, by the way, when you got to come up with names and you've already got something like Hezekiah Moscow there.
You wouldn't make that up.
Pretty
that's
incredible
my reality. Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. We're talking 1,000 Blows with Stephen Knight and Malachi Kirby.
When you're researching the area, the era, then, like, what are the hallmarks that we see here that you landed on? One of the things I was really interested in was the anarchism that was sort of happening at the time.
Yeah, there's a lot going on that was never scooped up by the historians and the history books, really. But this was an incredible time. I mean, this was the time when London was the capital of the world, not New York. It was, this is where everybody came. A melting pot, a stew of ideas, of concepts, very attractive, very magnetic to people, especially people with nothing who came there believing they could do something, And I did want to reflect the reality of it. And in order to do the research for that, I read newspapers rather than history books wherever possible, because that is it's not first-hand accounts, but it's contemporary accounts of what's going on. And what you get from that is the actual chaos and randomness of reality. Because history, I think, tends to tidy it up and straighten it out and say, well, obviously that happened, then that happened. So that was bound to happen. But at the time, there's all sorts going on. So there was a lot of people who believed in anarchism and communism, and all these different ideas were coming through. And what I wanted to reflect is that our characters don't go out seeking history. History seeks them out and affects them, and so they sort of experiencing what's going on in the world, and they're experiencing empire, and they're experiencing the change in the way the boxing's happening, all of those things happening to them. And I think it's the challenge of the writer is to create characters that are strong enough to survive the storm of history, if you like.
It's really poetic. It's almost like you write for a living or something. Really well said there. How much of the story do you know?
I know that the story came to me via Hannah, Stephen Graham's wife, who came across the Hezekiah Moscow photo first, which is a great way to get into anything. There's the photograph of Hezekiah Moscow standing there, and it's just such an evocative photograph. So she did some research and then asked me if I'd be interested, did some research into Hezekiah Mosco. What a story. He came with his best friend Alec, and Alec met the fate that he met. How can you resist? And I'd wanted for a long time to tell the story of the 40 elephants, which happened to be the same, historical period. And I just wondered what would have happened if Hezekiah Mosco had Mary Carr, who was the actual head of the 40 elephants, had ever met. And there's no historical proof that they didn't.
Well, and you all do so well in the intro, with the closing up of the pictures, and what a brilliant way to open that up. But you know, and that's what I was thinking, is like, you know, how far in advance, how much more of the story do you keep in your head as a writer? Like, do you see the scope? Like, if you get every wish and this gets multiple seasons on and on and on, like, do you already have that kind of planted in the back where it all goes?
Yeah, because you know, you hold hands and with history and let it lead you, because you know, well, I know that 40 Elephants went on until the 1950s, for example. Hezekiah Mosco disappeared but then was spotted in New York. So what that does, it gives you stepping stones, and then it's up to you to work out what might have happened in between, which gives you a lot of freedom, but it also gives you that anchor of reality.
Now, Malachi, on the more trivial fun side, I mean, you got to stay in incredible shape for a role like this, I'm guessing. Has that continued? Have you broken that yet?
You know, it was just Christmas. I fell off a little bit. But I'm back on it. And yeah, I started the year 2 times a day in the gym. I'm gonna try my best to keep it up when I get back to London. The diet is probably not the same as when I was shooting, for sure. I'm enjoying life a bit more and enjoying the cakes. But I'm really enjoying my physicality as well. And I love training. I loved training prior to this. I had never boxed before. Now I found a new love for that sport in particular and that way of training. I don't know that I'm gonna be fighting AJ or anybody like that anytime soon, but I'm enjoying this side of things. So yeah, definitely want to keep it up.
Have you found out that does that open up anything for you role-wise?
Maybe, you know, we're living in a time of like action heroes and Marvel superheroes and everything, and it's not like that's what I'm looking for, but if the right story comes along, the right role, then it's definitely not something I'd say no to.
Now, with the choreography that you have, though, in the ring, shooting a show like this, like, is there still room? You know what I'm getting to? I'm just going to ask the question. Did the injuries happen? Does anybody actually get hurt on a show like this?
So we shot 2 seasons back to back, and that meant me training essentially for a year because I started training about a month before we started filming, and I kept training for the rest of that year. And they built a boxing gym, which was incredible, just outside. I say boxing gym, boxing ring, right outside of the set, so that whenever I wasn't filming, I could go over to there and train with my coach. And so there was a lot of training that went into it. Definitely after about maybe say 7 months, my body started to let me know how it felt about me and what I was putting it through every day. Thankfully there weren't any like injuries as a result of fighting, but you know, I definitely reached a point where I was like, I could do with a bit more oil on my bones right now. You know, but yeah, there weren't any major injuries, nothing that stopped us shooting or anything like that, just a couple of knocks and cuts, but it's gonna happen. And honestly, I love that part of it. You know, anything that I can get to that is reminding me that this is, or is not reminding me that this isn't real. You know what I mean? Like blood is blood and whatever, cut is a cut. It's like, I love that stuff. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. We're talking A Thousand Blows with Stephen Knight and Malachi Kirby.
Well, I do love how you bring this character to life. I mean, you all have talked about there only being two existing pictures of this person, and for as much as Stephen can write this, like, you still have to bring something to it, and that idea about blank page creation, I think, is what I'm getting at. Like I don't know if you're even able to verbalize that, Malachi. Like what you see on the paper. Like, what? How do you build this guy beyond that, knowing that it's real? But you know. Like, you can, like, how much do you put yourself in that, I guess?
I think it's kind of probably impossible to not put myself in it. Do you know what I mean? Like whether it's conscious or subconscious, there is something that I am gonna bring to this that no one else can. And I've learned to not run away from that, like to allow myself to be a vessel and all of my life experience, my perspective, my lens to influence whatever role that I play. But that being said, this character isn't me. You know what I mean? And so as much as I can also, I'm delving into not just trying to put myself in his situation, but wondering, okay, what would life look like if I looked at it through this other lens? Do you know what I mean? As opposed to my perspective and his lens. Like, for example, I'm of Jamaican heritage. He's of Jamaican heritage. but his Jamaican heritage exists in the 1800s. My perspective of Jamaica is in 2025. Do you know what I mean? And so there's a different lens I'm looking at Jamaica from, even though it's the same place. It's a different lens that I'm looking at these people from. And so it was a mixture of bringing myself into it, but also bringing the research into it and the historical context of the time, what was happening in the world, what life would have looked like, what music would have sounded like, all of those things influencing his rhythm, his mannerisms. And I loved every part of it, honestly.
Yeah, I love watching it. And that historical context, and I'll bring this up really quickly at the end here, Stephen, am I wrong by thinking that we get hints that maybe this is all happening around the same time that Jack the Ripper is happening?
Jack the Ripper is always beguiling and problematic because there it stands, and everybody knows that story. And we made a conscious decision to be very careful about how we do that because, I mean, you don't want to put it forward as a sort of an attractive proposition that there's someone going around killing women. It's not when you think about it for real, when you forget, the legend and all of that. And it's not something that we wanted to lean on. But you can't avoid the fact that the stuff was going on in that area, Whitechapel, Wapping, all around there. So yeah, it's there, and it's all part of London in the late 19th century, with the fog and the crime and the alleys and the urchins, and you just get that thing of what London is, and it's got a great energy, you have to say. And then when you're writing anything in that context, you plug into it. Why wouldn't you?
I love having that in the background there. There's some fan service that kind of happens with something like that, you
Yeah.
know. And you know how it goes. You read on Reddit, like, we're only waiting for those connections when you start bridging your series universes together. I mean, how does Thousand Blows and Peaky end up in the same universe and all of that stuff, you know? And you only need someone like Jack the Ripper to do that, I think, is what I'm getting at. So it's
Exactly. I mean, it's I mean, there's a time difference, obviously. There's 40 years difference, but there's no question that there's a feeling about both of those series that is similar.
I again love what you do. Let me be the thousandth person to re-compliment you both on everything. I can't wait to see where this story continues to go. So thank you so much to both of you for making it and being a part of it, and especially for taking the time to talk about it today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to Stephen and Malachi, A Thousand Blows, playing now on Disney Plus. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already before you get out of here to get new interviews just like this one every single week. It's Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. And that's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music and bonus interviews, lots of music news. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Simon and Garfunkel, Bell X1, Primal Scream, Prince, The Smashing Pumpkins, Depeche Mode, Olivia Tremor Control, Ellis Bailey, LP, Kathleen Edwards, J.S. Ondara, Esquivel, Dry Cleaning, Tom Waits, and my interviews with Alex Turner of Arctic Monkeys, Wayne Coyne of The Flaming Lips, and Genndy Tartakovsky, infamous animator. That's what you can get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like, follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.